From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Tomorrow, we tantalize the taste buds with collard greens and bugs. We're going to debut our series of traditional and contemporary takes on essential Southern ingredients. But first, we would love to hear from you. What is the must-have Southern food or dish that you love to make? Tell us the story behind it. You can leave us a voicemail at 404-500-9457. You can find us on Twitter or on Facebook, and then be sure to join us tomorrow at 9 for more. But today, we are talking about Georgia's political history and strategies designed to sway voters in the South. Changing voter demographics and the rise of women candidates nationally has some folks convinced that 2018 is the year Georgia turns blue. We asked you to weigh in. Sam Jones has lived in Georgia for more than 20 years.
I think Georgia's turning blue. I think we're definitely seeing a shift, and I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon as Georgia continues to grow and Georgia continues to give voices to the minorities that haven't been well represented in the past.
Well, how likely is that shift? We're looking at some of the numbers with Emory University professor Andra Gillespie. Andra, welcome.
Thank you.
And also with us is Atlanta Journal-Constitution political reporter Greg Bluestein. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Andra, I'm going to start with you because you studied work on reverse migration. That is one possible reason for political shifts in Georgia. But first, what is reverse migration?
So between 1910 and 1970, demographers note that there was a mass exodus of African Americans out of the South, where they had previously been enslaved, to industrial centers in the North and in the West. A couple of generations removed from that great migration in the aughts, demographers started to note that many African Americans were moving from the North and the West back to the South. So they were coming seeking economic job opportunities in booming cities like Atlanta and Charlotte. And people were returning back to their ancestral homelands for retirement. And so during the 2000s, there was this discussion of an increase in the African American population in the South, where there were already plenty of Blacks. That hasn't always been pretty consistent or even, but we could just look at census numbers from 2000 to today. And so, you know, in 2000, the census had the African-American population of the state at just under 29%. Today, the most recent census figures put that at about 32%. And so what you see is a growing African-American population. And then you couple that with in-migration of other minority groups that also tend to trend Democratic, like Asian-Americans and Latinos. So we've seen a doubling of the Asian-American population in the state, and we've seen the Latino population in the state nearly double as well within the past, between 2000 and 2010.
So that pattern coincides with predicted political shifts, but 2000, that's exactly when things turned from blue to red in Georgia.
Or in 2002 in particular, to be specific. And so that was the culmination of more than 40 years of changing voting patterns among white Southerners.
So we have a voicemail from Jenny in Cleveland. She's a self-identified progressive in a conservative district.
And we hear stories about Democrats being a party of color, and yet up here, those that exist are all white people. So the coverage feels a little weird, and we, of course, feel very isolated from the rest of the progressive crowd in the state.
So this is something we've heard a lot, Greg. You know, we're a blue dot in a red state. You've reported on shifting demographics. Where are you seeing those changes in Georgia?
You're seeing it, and you're really going to start seeing it, I think, this year with this election, because Stacey Abrams, the Democratic candidate for governor, is really focused on expanding the universe of likely Democratic voters. Her campaign really believes there's an expanding universe of maybe a million or more than a million left-leaning voters who don't generally cast ballots, and she is trying to get them to cast ballots this year with a blend of mostly progressive policies. And so you're seeing her campaign really staking putting all its bets on the fact that it can expand that universe while also energizing and getting liberals in metro Atlanta, white liberals in the suburbs as well, and in some of these sort of, isolated blue dots to come out to the polls.
So what are you seeing in places where Trump lost, Fayette County, Gwinnett County? Is this a place to watch for changing from red to blue?
Yeah, Gwinnett County and Cobb County and Fayette County, but especially Gwinnett and Cobb County, are central to any Democratic hopes of flipping Georgia in November. These days, It was a surprise that both those counties flipped in 2016, but now it's sort of the backbone of any strategy for Democrats to retake the state.
Question for both of you. Fastest growing state in the South, growth of new industries, influx of people from tech, entertainment workers. Are they changing the electorate?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be contributing to this new coalition that Stacey Abrams in particular hopes to build. And so in particular, part of the reason why Cobb and Gwinnett counties are shifting is that, one, migration patterns have changed for newer immigrant groups in the United States. So you no longer come through an inner city. Oftentimes, Latino and Asian American populations head straight for suburbia. And we've also seen in central cities like Atlanta, we've seen that the African-American population of these cities has declined. And oftentimes when people are leaving the city of Atlanta, they are going to the suburbs, and then they may be joined by newcomers who are coming from other places. And the other thing that's important to not exclude whites from this discussion is that when you have people coming in from new industries, they may not be coming from parts of the country that are traditionally conservative. They may be younger. And so all of these things may be contributing to a growing white liberal population as well. That does not negate the shift that happened amongst whites in the South after the 1960s. And so, I mean, that was a very real shift from whites who had been yellow dog Democrats who, you know, slowly shift their party identification to the Republican Party. It started in presidential elections, and then it culminated in 2002. With that shift to voting Republican in statewide elections as well. So, you know, all of these things are coming together, and it's been giving the Democratic Party hope for the last 10 years that they could turn the state blue at some point.
So go ahead, Greg.
I was going to say that also helps explain some of the conservative angst over Amazon's second headquarters. It's much smaller, population patterns, but if 50,000 new jobs would be created by that, and many of them from out of state, many of them tech workers that could be more liberal, who knows, there is some sort of pushback you hear, especially from outside of Metro Atlanta, about that changing Metro Atlanta's dynamics.
So how likely, however, is it Metro Atlanta's dynamics are going to change, especially if you're talking about an influx of reverse migration, bringing a lot more minorities into that sort of area?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the last two open city elections, we've seen a Republican/independent candidate, Mario Norwood, come within a few hundred votes of winning those races as Atlanta becomes a little bit more more whiter. But in general, you're also seeing Metro Atlanta, as we mentioned earlier, with those three core counties of Metro Atlanta all flipping blue. You're seeing Metro Atlanta become a little bit more liberal.
So how are the campaigns different than they were in 2016 or 2014, responding to these new populations?
Well, we're seeing, of course, with Abrams, an entirely different strategy. She has broken with, you know, decade or so of conventional Democratic approach by, rather than saying we're going to appeal to the moderate suburbanite who used to be a Republican voter, she's saying, you know, we're happy to have those voters, but she's trying to energize mostly minority left-leaning voters across the state. Whereas I think Brian Kemp is a much more conventional Republican strategy, trying to wring out as many Republican conservative votes as he possibly can, going by the same strategy that Nathan Deal used, that Sonny Perdue used in past gubernatorial elections.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the one thing that I'd add to that is that I guess it was probably 12, 13 years ago when I was working in D.C. as a pollster. When we did races in the South, we were still asking questions about how you identified yourself for national elections versus how you identified yourself for state and local elections. And it was because we were still kind of in that period where we weren't sure sort of whether or not that secular realignment among Southern whites had actually changed. Now, if you're going to vote Democratic or you're going to vote Republican in a presidential election, you're going to vote Republican in your state and local elections as well. And so it doesn't make sense for Democrats to continue to think that you can get Republican presidential voters to vote for you in statewide elections. And then there's also just this issue of if the base of the Democratic Party in Georgia is African-American and female, then why shouldn't African-American women be allowed to have their chance to be able to run for the offices, especially given in 2014 how poorly Democratic candidates did amongst white voters, where they actually underperformed amongst white voters, even though African-American voters voted for them at the rates that we would have expected them to.
That's Andra Gillespie. She's an Emory University professor. She's with us along with Greg Bluestein from the AJC, a political reporter. We're talking about Georgia's changing political landscape. And of course, Stacey Abrams is the key here in many ways. This is the candidate riding that tide of women candidates and also a blue wave that Democrats are hoping to be riding. And here are some others reported by CBS Evening News host Jeff Glore.
In Kentucky, former Marine pilot Amy McGrath won a hard-fought primary for a potential congressional seat. And in Texas, former Dallas County Sheriff Lupe Valdez became the state's first openly gay and Latina gubernatorial nominee from a major party.
So we have Ayanna Pressley, we have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Johanna Hayes. These are women who are pitching their campaigns and also producing videos that are about their personal story rather than their political stance, so to speak. What is behind that tactic, do you think? And how is that appealing to the voters that Democrats are trying to grab?
Well, I mean, I think there are a number of things to think about. In terms of self-presentation, people are trying to present themselves in ways that hopefully match in some way what the values of a particular district are. So while Stacey Abrams is definitely a progressive, she's using her progressive policy stances to pitch bread and butter types of pragmatic issues. So she's not Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez by any stretch of the imagination. And if Ocasio-Cortez tried to run here in Georgia, she would lose. And so I think it's really important to kind of look to see sort of whether or not the candidate actually fits the jurisdiction in which they're running. And in all of these instances, we have seen places where they fit and their general election chances are actually molded by sort of how strong of a fit they actually are for the general electorate and not just the Democratic Party electorate.
So how about, go ahead, Greg.
I was going to say, one thing to add is also we're seeing this national trend where more women are running for U.S. Congress seats, more women running for Senate, more women running for gubernatorial seats, but also in Georgia, down the ticket, we have more women running for state legislative office than ever before, about 120 overall, including more Republican women, a smaller number than Democratic women, but about 30 Republican women running for state legislative seats. And we're seeing them try to navigate the sort of Trump era at the same time as running for public office.
And I think a part of it is that women are being asked to run and actually seeing themselves as viable candidates in ways that they hadn't been before. Oftentimes, one of the reasons why women are so underrepresented in elected offices in the United States is that women aren't socialized to run for office. And there have been grassroots organizations that have existed for decades now at this point. But that, coupled with the Women's March and the reaction to Trump, I think is getting women to have conversations about how they can make a difference by running for public office and putting themselves up for office in ways that we hadn't seen before.
So following other trends and populations that are going on nationally. So where does Georgia fit into these national trends, you know, especially if you're looking at the presidential election coming up in 2018?
Yeah, well, I mean, as we said, Georgia is sort of following the national trend. We have not only Stacey Abrams running for governor at the top of the ticket, but also female candidates on the Democratic side up and down the ballot, and one Republican statewide candidate, Tricia Pridemore, who's a recently appointed public service commissioner, but also watch those down ticket races. There are women running in a lot of competitive state legislative races poised to play a very big role in the next legislative session. And as Professor Gillespie mentioned too, they're raising cash in ways they didn't raise before. They're getting a lot of media attention. They're getting the sort of credibility behind their campaigns because they're running in these competitive districts that weren't competitive 6 or 8 years ago, but are suddenly now right on the precipice.
Right. I did say presidential election of 2018. I meant in 2020. Whether or not Georgia is a test case, I guess, for 2020 is the question.
Yeah. We're losing some of that national attention because of the Florida race.
Right.
But this race between Abrams and Kemp in many ways is a test for 2020 because a lot of the same sort of ideological values that we might see in 2020 are being put to the test now. We've got a President Trump anointed candidate in Brian Kemp going against Stacey Abrams, who is endorsed not only by Hillary Clinton, but also Bernie Sanders and many of the 2020 potential candidates on the Democratic side. And you're seeing a battle sort of play out on expansion of Medicaid, on more school funding, and on gun control in a major way in a state where Democrats have never really embraced, at least leading state Democrats have never really embraced gun control measures. Stacey Abrams is. And so this will be a big test of that philosophy as well.
But I mean, I think the test is sort of how well she does. And to go back to the first segment, you know, I have to admit, you know, I agree the fundamentals in the state still favor a Republican candidate. I would say it's a pink state. It's not ruby red.
But not purple.
Well, we'll have to wait to see. And so, you know, if this race becomes a 4-point race, basically, that we end up looking for a two-party vote standpoint to 58-42. One, at this point, I can't predict which one of them gets 52 and which one of them gets 48. But that actually does represent a certain level of competitiveness that I think we have to get used to. And that is what makes Georgia competitive. It's not a foregone conclusion that the Republican candidate wins a contest, you know, in a cakewalk anymore. And that's probably not going to be the case for the near future.
So we have just a minute left. But even before I moved to Georgia a couple months ago, people were saying it's a blue state. It's going purple. It's blue. You know, a lot of different predictions. How we just heard about Lee Atwater and the importance of messaging and strategy. Is there strategy in saying Georgia's going to become a blue state, either by Democrats or by Republicans who want to scare voters off out to the polls?
Well, I mean, so when the Democratic Party of Georgia first started to say this, I started to become very cognizant of this around 2013. They were looking at the demographics, and I thought they were pinning their hopes on people who at the time were 15 years old and of color. And I was like, by 2018, they're probably not going to be your most reliable voters, but give them another 10 or 15 years and they might be. And if those partisan voting patterns still hold, then this is absolutely true. So, I mean, I think part of it is sort of calling things that aren't as though they were, but I mean, it's not totally out of thin air.
Stacey Abrams likes to say, we are a blue state, we're just confused. We'll find out in November if that's the case.
Greg Bluestein, he's a political reporter for the AJC. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And also Andra Gillespie, professor of political science. She's at Emory. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is our show for today. But we do, of course, want to hear from you. If you're voting this election year, what are the issues that are on your radar? What kind of messaging are you hearing about why you should or shouldn't vote? Leave us a message. Call us at 404-500-9457. You can reach us on Twitter or on our Facebook group. On Second Thought is produced by Elena Rivera, Leighton Rowell, and LaRaven Taylor. Tyler Morris is our technical director, and Sean Powers is our senior producer. Don Smith edits the show, and our theme song, new theme song, is by Alex Christman and Marshall Ruffin. I'm Virginia Prescott. Thanks so much for spending some time with us today. This is On Second Thought.